Welcome to the Full of Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 6:29 Greenwich Mean Time. Today is February 17th. Today being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. First, let's have a review of what's been happening this week. It's been a largely positive week for stock markets. The majority are finishing out the week in positive territory. For some markets, this is the seventh consecutive week to the upside, and there are short-term overbought conditions evident on a number of markets. In the commodity sector, you've had a pretty mixed performance. Oil in particular has been strong this week. You saw Brent crude move above $120 yesterday. It was a tiny bit weaker today. It's about $119, but it's broken the progression of lower rally highs that have been evident for almost a year. And it does look like that the risks are to the upside in that particular contract. West Texas Intermediate was stronger today by almost a full dollar. It seems to be extending its advance above the $100 area. It's currently at $103. It also looks like the risks are to the upside in that particular contract. Natural gas appears to have found support. So you are starting to see that you're getting the energy complex showing a high degree of relative strength, and there is a theme very much motivating that, in that people are really quite nervous about the prospects for trouble to brew in Iran. There's also the blowing up of pipelines in Syria and the continued unrest in the region is really putting a premium on energy contracts. The improving economic conditions in the USA are also helping to drive prospects for increased demand for energy. That's also helping to support prices in here. This was a relatively positive week for gold. Gold went right down and tested the $1,700 area. It rebounded very impressively yesterday. It's a tiny bit weaker in here today, but it continues to hold above the $1,700 area. This has been a very orderly consolidation, and provided it continues to hold in that area, then the prospects for it to be able to sustain a move back above $1,800 and indeed to new high ground at some point this year remain really quite favorable indeed. This week we saw a pretty concerted weakness right across the industrial metal complex. The vast majority have now declined for a number of consecutive days. Copper, for example, had been as high as nearly $4. Earlier this week, it's down to $3.72. Nickel has fallen back below the 20,000 area. The lead contract has been down for the last six consecutive sessions. So you are getting certainly quite a bit of weakness in that particular area. The grain and bean complex has been a bit firmer. You've seen that the majority of these have actually found support in the last week. There seems to be a large divergence developing between Arabica and Robusta coffees. Robusta coffee has rallied very impressively. There's a bit of a short squeeze going on in that market. There's a very wide backwardation in between the first and the second month contracts. Arabica coffee, on the other hand, has been accelerating to the downside, and it's extended its medium-term downtrend in the last week. When we look at the government bond markets, they've been rallying for the last few weeks. They encountered resistance to the upper side of their respective ranges in the middle of this week, and now they're pulling back from them. The majority of the sovereign bond markets have been ranging for the last 4 months. It's been a very tight range. Ranging phases are boring relative to the trending phases. Expectations tend to go down. There has been a bit of a status quo has developed in some of these sovereign bond markets, in that they've been very tightly range bound, and I don't think that people have particularly high expectations for where these markets can go. But as we say at the chart seminar, a range is an explosion waiting to happen, and it is only a matter of time before we get a successful breakout or breakdown from these ranges, and when that occurs, it's likely to be rather dramatic. We are starting to see that the Australian 10-year has already broken downwards. That's probably one of the markets where inflation is likely to become apparent quickest, and the RBA has already paused in its interest rate cutting. So you're starting to see that investors are pricing that into the yield on the bonds, and the 10-year government bond yield does look like it's going to go higher in this environment. The US dollar was pretty volatile during the week. It started out the week reasonably firm, then it weakened and strengthened up a little bit in here today. The euro has been relatively steady, and the yen, which I think the vast majority of people have written off that the Bank of Japan was ever going to do anything substantive to devalue the currency, has been up now for, has been down for the last 4 consecutive days. Against the US dollar is now up to 79.45 against the yen. It spent more time above the 78 area than it has at any time in the last 4 or 5 months at least. And this does look like we are in a much more positive environment. The stock market in Japan has reacted really quite favorably. It was up another 1.5% in here today. Over the last 2 months, the Nikkei has rallied from about 8,000. It's currently at 9,384. And while a little bit overstretched in the short term, it's being led higher by the banking sector. It is due a little bit of a pause in consolidation in here, but as long as that yen is weakening, that is a catalyst for change in terms of investor sentiment towards the Japanese market. That's something we've been saying now for a number of years, and I suppose when we started talking about the need for a weak yen to be a catalyst for Japan, no one expected the Bank of Japan to take so long to really get its act in gear. So it does look like that they have finally changed tack. They've announced an inflation target of 1%. The economy contracted last year. So deflation last year. So 1% is a rather ambitious target. It does mean that they're going to have to adopt quite a bit more quantitative easing. They're deliberately targeting inflation now. And that means that the pressure could quite easily come on the yen. And it weakened this week, not just against the US dollar, but also against the euro and particularly against the Australian dollar, where there is quite a wide interest rate differential, at least 4%. When we take a look at the wider picture, over the last 6 and 7 months, the commonality that was evident from 2008 all the way through until about the middle of this summer, of the summer of 2011, broke down in July and August. That was when we saw a big divergence between companies that were leveraged to infrastructure development and GDP growth begin to underperform relative to those that were leveraged to the growth of the global consumer. The shares that are leveraged to the growth of the global consumer have been among the best absolute performers and relative performers over the last 6 and 7 months. Now, some of them have rallied very spectacularly in the last 6 and 7 weeks. They're a bit overbought in the short term, but they're not likely to have anything more than a reversion towards the mean, which will likely set up the next favorable buying opportunity. In the Asian region, the smaller Asian markets, such as the Philippines, Indonesia, Malaysia, Thailand, have been among the best performers. They've also rallied first. The Philippines was the first market to break upwards to new high ground. South African market was the next, then the Nasdaq. Now, the Nasdaq is being led higher by some of its largest shares, but the biotechnology sector is also taking off in here. Gilead Sciences broke out of a year-long range in early January and has rallied on, I think, for the last 5 consecutive weeks to get back up and test its all-time high. Now, that's been an incredible performance, but this is another share that is really quite overextended in the very short term. If one were buying at this particular moment, one would have to accept the probability that you are going to get a better entry point at some point in the next few weeks or probably months. So we've had a remarkable performance in some of these stock markets. The relative strength that we've seen in some of these leading markets is very encouraging. The cyclical bull market that has gripped the vast majority of stock markets is helping to bolster some of those markets that are in secular bull markets. The fact that you have the greatest urbanization in history continuing to evolve in Asia in particular is helping to drive demand for just about everything. And companies that are leveraged to that growth are demonstrating absolute and relative performance. That doesn't mean that they're always going to be the best performers. Certainly some of them now are due a pullback, in which case they're not going to be the best performing sector. They are likely to find support first, they are likely to break upwards to new highs first, and they are likely to be among the best absolute performers over the coming years. There remains a number of challenges for the global economy. I think most people at present are focused on Greece. And the Greek crisis continues to evolve. The big question has always been, would the Greek government be able to bring the population with it in accepting the various austerity measures that were being foisted upon it by the various European institutions? It's looking increasingly likely that they will be able to, because they're getting better at describing what the alternative might be, and that is particularly unsavory. The Europeans in particular have also become a bit more solution focused in the last 2 and 3 months, and part of the reason that the majority of stock markets have rallied so spectacularly in the last couple of months is because the ECB has adopted quantitative easing. They're obviously not calling it that, but they're making virtually unlimited amounts of capital available to the financial sector. Now, the financial sector needed to be recapitalized, and it is being done in I think, a somewhat underhanded way, but it is occurring at present. The next big problem or challenge for the Eurozone is how they're going to tackle growth. There are so many of these peripheral countries are so overburdened with debt that they're not going to be able to plow any kind of capital into growth measures for probably the next decade. And if they want to be able to bring their various populations with them, then they're going to have to start tackling unemployment. And that's going to be a substantial challenge. It may have to involve additional debt forgiveness, even for countries that haven't immediately requested it or forced it upon the market, such as Greece. But that is probably the next hurdle that will need to be overcome in this particular crisis. What we are now starting to see, though, is that investors are also becoming solution-focused rather than problem-focused. They understand the problems. They're now starting to see that central banks are providing solutions. And that solution is a massive increase in liquidity. We have virtually every globally significant central bank beginning to increase its money supply. Now, they're doing that because the velocity of money has been deteriorating. They're not worried about inflation because provided the velocity of money is deteriorating, they can virtually create as much liquidity as they like. Because they think that they can sanitize it once the velocity of money starts to pick up again. They're going to continue to print money until they're very sure that the velocity of money has actually recovered. I posted a number of charts on this subject, I think probably on Wednesday of this week. Now, that means that not only have we had a big injection of liquidity over the last couple of months, but that we can expect even more liquidity to hit these markets. It suggests also that the extraordinarily volatile situation that we had between August and October and November has probably ended, and that we can probably expect that any consolidations that occur will be a bit more orderly. Now, that's I think that's for probability at this stage. It's certainly not a certainty. but with the amount of capital that is being created, or I suppose liquidity that's being created, they might well be destroying capital. That would suggest, that would be the suggestion, that we're going to have less volatile consolidations. We're also seeing that the better performing markets are outperforming in no uncertain terms. The continuous commodity index has been trending lower for nearly 10 months now, and it's rallied over the last few weeks, and it's testing the 200-day moving average as we speak. Now, if it sustains a move above that area, then the prospect of commodity price inflation becoming a problem again in the next few months will have increased really quite substantially. At present, while we have quite an impressive rally going on in the energy sector, we're not seeing it in the industrial metal sector or in the agricultural sector. So while energy is by far the most important commodity sector, the immediate effects are unlikely to be particularly damaging. The longer, however, energy prices stay higher, the probably more deleterious the effects are going to be over the medium term. When we look at what's happening in the US economy, growth is starting to pick up once more. It's been greatly assisted by the fact that the US dollar has deteriorated quite a lot over the last few years. Manufacturing is beginning to pick up once more. That's being helped by increasingly more accommodative labor conditions. And it's being helped by the boom that's going on in the energy sector. Now, the USA has significant problems, and just like problems that have been going on elsewhere, these problems are well understood. There are massive unfunded liabilities. Some might say that it is impossible to pay those, to meet those liabilities under the current regime. Now, the important thing to remember about impossibility is that it's impossible. If it can't be done, it won't be done. It means that reform will happen one way or the other. Now, whether it is forced upon the USA or whether it actually adopts it itself are probably two separate issues entirely. But the massive boom that we're getting in the energy complex greatly increases the potential that the USA is going to become energy independent at some point over the next decade. That makes a lot of the deficit problems and the unfunded liabilities much easier to deal with. One might say that that's a bit of a pity, because there are some serious problems that do need to be addressed, and it looks like politicians need a significant push to really get themselves in gear. They may not have to cut nearly as much as they need to. They may not have to reform as much as what many would like. But that should help the economy to recover in here. We've had a big pullback in the property market. It does appear to be in the process of bottoming. There's a massive overhang of supply that should keep a lid on property price inflation for quite a bit, for a number of years. Affordability has increased considerably, so people that have money and can gain access to credit will be able to afford homes. And that's probably the way it should be. It shouldn't be a system where anyone who wants a mortgage can get one. There needs to be some form of credit check on people. It's probably a bit too stringent at present. It could do with a little bit of relaxing, but certainly not back to the situation that existed with subprime. If the USA is returning to growth and manufacturing is beginning to move back to the USA, that is the type of recipe where the secular bull bear market that has been evident on Wall Street since 1999 and 2000 will probably end at some point in this decade. That would suggest that the Wall Street indices, the Dow and the S&P will be able to sustain moves to new all-time highs at some point in this decade, the S&P in particular. They're probably due a bear market between now and when they can actually do that. The S&P isn't that far off its 2008 peak. The Dow Jones isn't either. So they're probably going to go up and potentially test those levels at some point this year or in the next 18 months. I'd be surprised if they're going to be able to sustain moves upwards to new high ground without some form of additional pullback in that time frame. But whereas sentiment towards the USA is particularly bearish, and probably none more so than people that are very close to the very close to the situation, namely people living in America. But there are definite bullish characteristics to this situation there, and with the correct governance, then the outlook for a substantial bull market over the medium to long term is really quite evident. Now, when we look at the Dow gold ratio, that has compressed considerably over the last decade. If it's going to get back to the historic lows that we've seen in following major bull markets in stocks over the last 100 years, then there is additional potential for gold to outperform. Gold has been consolidating here around the $1,700 area, and it had a very large blow-off above $1,900 6 months ago. It's not unusual that over the last decade, gold has had these phenomenal price accelerations, which have been followed by 18-month consolidations. Now, the periods of consolidation have shortened up over the last 2 years, not least because there are a lot more people interested in gold. There is a certain amount of Heidegger's uncertainty principle to all of this, in that the more people know about the consistency characteristics, the less predictable those consistency characteristics become. So whereas people already started to think about 18-month consolidations back in 2009, then they started to anticipate them, and then they shortened up those periods of consolidation. Gold has now been consolidating for 6 months. It's unlikely it's going to be consolidating for the next year. Gold shares have been ranging for over a year. They found support above at a progressively higher level again this week, and yesterday they formed an upside Q reversal. Incidentally, so did Palladium. It looks more likely that the Gold Bugs Index is going to push back up towards the upper side of its range. Gold itself is probably due some additional time to consolidate and build support in and around the current area. But the bullish outlook still remains quite favorable over the medium term. U.S. Treasury prices are at historic highs. Now, that's the case also with sovereign bonds in the UK, Japan, Switzerland, Canada, Australia, and the Eurozone. Now, and by the Eurozone I mean mostly Germany and Northern European creditors. We've had an incredible explosion in the supply of government bonds. And that isn't because governments suddenly have a much better ability to pay off their debts. It's because they're socializing private debt. We've seen that the amount of liquidity that's being provided is helping to support these prices a bit further. But this isn't a situation that can go on indefinitely. And because we've seen that central banks have been pushing further out the curve in terms of duration, it's going to be more difficult for them to sanitize their holdings. The Federal Reserve has already said that they're going to hold on to their long-dated treasuries until they expire. That suggests that the size of their balance sheet is going to remain large for the foreseeable future. Now, these government bond prices and government bond yields at such historically low levels can stay there for a considerable period of time. In Japan's case, they've stayed at historically low levels for a decade. And that's been because growth hasn't picked up at all. It's actually been contracting. The velocity of money in Japan has been deteriorating for a considerable period of time. It means that the amount of money that the Bank of Japan has been creating hasn't done anything to stoke inflation. There's been a different tack taken in the USA. They've been much more aggressive. And they are probably more likely to be able to stoke inflation. That remains very much an open question. And at right now, there aren't any inflationary pressures, particularly in wages. There are certainly inflationary pressures building in the commodity sector. But even there, the energy sector in the USA isn't nearly as inflationary as it is elsewhere. Perhaps where the greatest inflationary pressures are in services in the USA right now. So, government bond prices can stay higher for longer than many people expect. But something that we see at the top of every major bull market is that supply explodes. And when yields do start to push higher, then that's going to be the end of a 30-year and potentially more than 30-year bull market in bond prices. And that will also push borrowing costs up considerably from where they are today. That isn't something that we have any evidence is imminent. But the end to the major bull market in US treasuries and indeed in debt generally is probably closer than many people expect. One of the other defining characteristics of all major bull markets is that they thrive on contradiction. And the contradiction evident in the sovereign bond markets is as plain as day. What they are attempting to do is solve a debt problem with more debt. And logically, that isn't going to make any sense, particularly when debt-to-GDP ratios are at already historically high levels. So there is no clear evidence yet that government bond prices have topped out. They've certainly hit a near-term high. It's a potentially a medium-term high. Whether it's a long-term high or not remains to be seen, and it'll probably be well off the high and well off the low in terms of yields before that can really be said with a high degree of confidence. What we can say is that sooner or later that is going to happen. When it does happen, inflation is going to come front and center really very, very quickly indeed. In the meantime, we see that governments are continuing to fuel a rally in risk assets with increased supply of money. There's no indication that they're about to reverse that policy. It means that we can expect more money to hit these markets, that even though we have short-term overbought conditions, that reactions are likely to be shallow, and that these uptrends will subsequently be reasserted, and we can expect further rallies for the majority of markets in here. I think with that, I'll leave you for the weekend. I wish all the best to all of you.